Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour on this, the next to the last day of July 2015. That would be the 30th day of July 2015 for anybody out there going, 30 days after September. It's definitely not February. No, it's the 30th day of July 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. This program is live. Yes, indeed. And, oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way early this time before I forget. Folks already wandering into the Horn chat room, you too can join in the real-time, multimedia, full-on extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Don't be an ass, and you'll be part of it. You'll just have a real good time, because right now, as the program begins, and thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob, much obliged, Jeremy. There in the chat room, yes, indeed, Doctor Who, Jeremy in Vermont, Jug of Punch, and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, for the folks who were right there at the beginning of the program. Yes, indeed. Also, of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will always find the Contribute tab. That's how we keep this on the air. We don't sell subscriptions. We don't sell vacuum cleaners to pick up bowling balls that have had hair grown on them by herbal remedies guaranteed to grow hair on bowling balls that drop them on Swedish mattresses. And buy gold now while you're listening to your Bose Wave radio or that's sitting on a piece of furniture that's sitting on a piece of flooring from some, never mind. We don't do any of that. Nothing to sell here. The only thing we're doing is maintaining a little community that is run by your kind gifts. And speaking of which, we try to raise $200 every evening to keep all the bills paid. And we find ourselves, because we didn't quite get it all done yesterday, we had a hole to fill on prayer meeting Wednesday, and we got a few spadefuls of earth into the hole, but we didn't get it filled all the way up to the surface. So this evening's fundraising goal, based on last night's "Oh my God, how much fun was that? Let's make Bob do math on the fly" episode. Tonight's fundraising goal is $337.48. $337.48. That's where Joan took us to at by the end of the program last night. $137.48. So we add that to the $200, and yes, I can do that kind of math pretty easy. $337.48. That would be 10 folks at $33.74, or 33.74 people at $10 apiece. Oh, we're already in trouble, but you get the idea. The Contribute tab is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and there are fields in the PayPal interface there on the first part of it that have absolutely nothing to do with making a contribution, and you can ignore them. The one about Uncle Humbert's knee brace size, right? Yeah, you can blow that off. Just get to the next screen, and that's where you choose PayPal, MasterCard, Visa, etc. No Bitcoin. But that's all there for you. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, checks and money order made money orders made payable to the Horn can always be sent to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And special thanks going out this evening to Randy, who has kindly provided us with further protection for the equipment plugged into the antiquated coal-fired mid-20th century power grid poorly maintained by Appalachian Power. Thank you very kindly. It is a monster of an uninterruptible power supply, and I just got it from Boss Man Wayne today, and it will go into service over the weekend. And I was awfully glad to see it because, frankly, I'm a little, I don't guess sleep deprived is the right word, but sleep interrupted. There we were, Agnes and me. And Ma in her kerchief and I in my cap, and it just settled down to a long summer's nap when out on the lawn it sounded like a war had begun, as Odin his lightning bolts there had flung. Oh, yeah, the whole room turned blue. Agnes popped up out of the bed and, "What the?" Of course, she doesn't use language like that. Agnes, the Viking warrior princess, doesn't. But, yeah, what? And so, little, naughty, I guess, N-O-D-D-Y. Not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y. That involves chaps, as I'm sure Jim would be happy to remind us. No, a little naughty, N-O-D-D-Y. But we'll get through 3 hours of real live, honest-to-goodness, live conversation radio this evening. Hopefully, by the time 3 hours have passed, we will have come up with 3:37:48, or maybe even 5:37:48, because that would knock out the entire month of July and have us finish on a high note. Wouldn't that be fun? No, Anatole, we don't, in the chat room, less chaps. They are by definition less, okay? I, not being in the chaps business, I didn't understand that at first either, but it kind of goes with the territory that they don't have one, right? Right. Okay, so it is, in fact, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, I guess it is. It's funny like listening to Jethro Bodine do his gazintas. 7 gazinta 14 two times, 7 gazinta 21 three times. Uncle Jed. And I'm happy to attempt it on the fly. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. It depends on how much carrying's going on. But, hopefully we will take care of all of that this evening, and it would be extremely helpful because there are bills to be paid from the end of last month. Because we never quite seem to get, ahead. I think it's the Gulfstream 5 payments that are holding us back. Either that or cabana service and pool service. I'm not sure which. Maybe all of the above. Probably needs to be a little belt tightening here. You try taking the pool service away from Agnes. Good luck. So it is the Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, of course, we reserve Thorn in the Side Thursday for those manifestations of right-wing and other forms of, intellectual activity that go even further than Titanic Tuesday's right-wing idiocy. This is the top shelf stuff. This is the single barrel stupid. And I thought we might start with something I like to call stuff you may have missed while we've been having a hissy about a dead lion. And both of these, in particular, one of these stories goes precisely to a point that I raised last night about the difference between good cops and bad cops. And, you may recall that I said last night that the difference between good cops and bad cops is that bad cops are bad, and good cops know who they are, and the reason the good cops never rat out the bad cops is because they know that in a pinch, the dirty cops can be relied on to cover their asses when the good cops make a mistake that could otherwise mean their ass. We have a precise example of that. It was years ago, almost 4 years ago, that the Huntsville, Alabama Police Department responded to a domestic violence complaint. There's nothing particularly Alabama about that. It happens all over this country because, well, for some reason or another, I guess it's a larger discussion to be had, maybe at a later time, perhaps. Maybe now. I don't know. Depends on what you want to do. But I think a violent nation is going to have violence on all levels. We're going to have national, international violence. We're going to have institutional violence, and the violence trickles all the way down to the home, and domestic violence, and of course it's often fueled by alcohol, some drugs, and a whole lot of ignorance and poverty. Of course, if you say something like that, the right-wingers respond, "See, he just wants to have a sensitivity session. What you need to do is beat the shit out of them." Right? Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, on December the 23rd, 2011, Gary Wayne Hopkins was accused of domestic violence by his spouse. And the accusations were aggravated insofar as he was reported to have beaten his wife in front of their children. And in point of fact, that's a surefire remedy for making sure that it finds its way into the next generation. Yep. But regardless, let's understand that Gary Wayne Hopkins was not a model arrestee. They put him into the cruiser, the Huntsville Police Department did. And at that point in time, he became quite further agitated and kicked out the rear window of one of the police cars. I'm just wagering here. I could be wrong. But A, Gary Wayne Hopkins is still alive. And with a name like Gary Wayne, yeah, I'm betting he's a white guy. So instead of killing him, the cops just beat the snot out of him. In particular, Officer Brett Russell, once he had Gary Wayne Hopkins in handcuffs, mind you, Officer Brett Russell is alleged to have beaten the living bejesus out of Gary Wayne Hopkins. That's a complicated legal and medical term, beating the living bejesus out of someone. Yeah, he was beaten badly enough that when they took him to the jail would not accept him until such time as he had been treated for his injuries at the local hospital. So it becomes a King, the beating of Gary Wayne Hopkins in police custody. And the thing is, there were witnesses as Officer Brett Russell beat the living bejesus out of Gary Wayne Hopkins, who some people, and God knows, if you go and read, and I realize referring to fiction is probably not the best idea in the world, but sometimes art imitates life. Early on in the pages of Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, she says that her daddy, Atticus Finch, developed a distaste for doing criminal defense legal work when he had a case in which his client, the defendant, insisted on mounting the defense of the bastard had it coming to him. But the fact of the matter is, there are huge swaths of this country where the bastard had it coming to him is an informal legal defense. And that may very well have been in the back of the mind of Officer Brett Russell. You know, hollering and swearing and carrying on and kicking out the rear window of a police cruiser and, yeah. But still, police are not empowered to dispense a form of rough summary justice. That's reserved for prosecutors to argue for and judges and juries to mete out. But I guess we can say that Officer Brett Russell, well, his temper got the better of him. And he beat the living bejesus out of Gary Wayne Hopkins. And, you know, it was all caught on camera. There's another moment where those cameras just don't seem to do the job they're supposed to do. Now, mind you, the Huntsville City Council examined the case in 2012 and promptly, the Huntsville Police Department promptly fired Officer Brett Russell. But then the Huntsville City Council examined the firing and unanimously reinstated Officer Russell. As I noted, though, two other police officers were present and witnessed the whole thing. One of those people was Officer Joshua Bates, who is still with the Huntsville Police Department. And he... upon being asked during the investigation, well, he told Internal Affairs that he didn't see nothing and Russell didn't do nothing. Another individual, a participant in the police department's ride-along program, and that's another discussion, why do we have these? Said he lied to investigators because, see, there's a federal court suit going on now there in the Northern District of Alabama. When the investigators asked the ride-along participant, he said that Gary Wayne Hopkins had spit at, insulted, and attempted to headbutt officers prior to getting the living bejesus beaten out of him. In court, in court this past Monday, that participant said that that was, in fact, all a lie. Just in case you're wondering, now remember, this beating took place on December the 3rd, 2011. He was then fired in 2012 and reinstated by a unanimous vote of the Huntsville City Council. As of this moment, Officer Russell is still a paid employee of the Huntsville Police Department, but he's on an indefinite administrative leave. That means he's got a paid vacation until they call him back or until this case is concluded. Because the FBI did step in, and he is facing federal criminal charges of deprivation of a person's civil rights under the color of law and obstruction of justice. He faces up to 30 years in prison. And so it was that on Tuesday, Officer Joshua Bates, who was an officer in training at the time and had already lied to Internal Affairs and had already lied in his own right to other investigators, well, he said he had kept his silence previously because he was afraid he'd get canned, lose his job, because he was an officer in training. But it was like something out of a cross between Matlock and Perry Mason when on Tuesday in federal court, he broke down and confessed in open court that he had covered the whole thing up, that he had in fact lied to cover for Officer Brett Russell. I mention this case because, A, it is a tremendous rarity, and, B, to illustrate the point that I raised last night, that cops protect each other. Good cops protect bad cops because good cops know that sometimes they're going to need a bad cop to cover for them, and thereby they all become bad cops. And this exists, of course, because there's really no appropriate oversight of police departments in the United States. Oh, you may say, but what about this case? This case proves that there is appropriate oversight. No, it doesn't. It proves that one cop who beat up one white dude, I don't have a photo, but I'm betting white dude. Well, it proves that the white guy is going to get some justice. That's about all it proves. Apart from the fact, as I asserted before, that everybody knows what's going on inside these police departments, and they will, without fail, cover for each other. This ought to be interesting. There is some fun language involved with this clip, so we can at least run it here on the interweb tubes. This is what the whole thing's about.
It's going to be bad. You understand me? Okay, you done kicked out a window. I tell you right now, you're going to get put in leg tackles. You understand me? If you move and try to kick me, it's going to be bad.
Okay, so guy is in the back of the cruiser. He is, in fact, just a redneck guy. He is handcuffed with his hands behind his back. And you've already heard there Officer Russell telling him what the consequences may be.
I think we're going to take you out and put you in leg tackles.
Hey, Russell,
go ahead. Let Russell, go ahead. Look at this. Oh, no. Oh, no. Stop resisting.
You got that? The guy is down on the ground. The only thing he can move are his legs, and they're not moving. The cops are beating the snot out of him, yelling, "Stop resisting, stop resisting." I mean, this is like what happens when you've got like a 5-year-old little boy and an 8-year-old brother, and the 8-year-old brother takes his hand and makes the 5-year-old punch himself in the face and says, "Quit hitting yourself in the face, quit hitting yourself in the face." They're stomping him, they're kneeing him, kicking him.
Stop resisting it. Let us put you in cuffs.
And the cop leans in on another vehicle so he can get leverage to get a full all the way back hip pivot kick into Gary Wayne.
Stop resisting.
You can barely hear him. I'm not resisting.
Who's kidding?
I don't know.
What is it? Go put him in your car.
Maybe it's
your car. You ain't going to be able to put it in her car
because
he's got...
Are you talking about
that? just another evening of the enforcement of street justice in the United States of America. Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Yeah. What's the takeaway on that? I think there's several. But first among them is that, well, it's further proof that we have a little epidemic on our hands. Now, this is what they do to a white guy in Alabama. Imagine if you dare. What happens to a black guy? In this case, Gary Wayne got himself... He didn't get the rough ride that they're so famous for in Baltimore. He just got roughed up on the pavement before they threw him in the car. And guess what? He could still walk, Officer Russell could. Yeah, isn't that great? Because the jury, tried and true, is going to get this case at some point in time. Mm-hmm. I'll try to remember and see if we can't keep up with the how it all shakes out. Oh, thanks very kindly to Carol. More fun with math this evening. Our fundraising goal just dropped to the first even number we've seen in a while, by God. From $337.48, we now have $299 to go for fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Carol. You are indeed a giver. Let's stay in Alabama for a time. And not just any part of Alabama, but, well, the old The old home dirt for me. Mm-hmm. This is creepy as hell. So, a woman who is being identified at this point in time as a Jane Doe got herself arrested in Northwest Alabama. The sheriff's office come and arrested her for an outstanding warrant. But before they arrested her, there's some details to work through here. Before they arrested her, the woman in question, the Jane Doe, found out she was pregnant. And she had already made her choice and had decided that she was going to terminate the pregnancy, as is her right under the Constitution of the United States of America. There is still a clinic where a woman can seek reproductive medical care only about 72 miles east of where she lives in that self-same Huntsville, Alabama, where the cops beat the snot out of Gary Wayne Hopkins. Now, the court papers that are involved with this case don't tell us why she was arrested. Lauderdale County, Alabama Sheriff Rick Singleton, however, says that she faces multiple charges. Now, remember, Alabama has a waiting period for abortions. You have to be initially screened and then wait 48 hours. And the good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians hope that in that 48 hours, the woman will realize what a filthy she-devil she is behaving like and will come to her senses and have the baby in the name of Jesus. So, she filed a petition to be allowed, not just let out of jail, but allowed out of jail long enough to pursue a medical procedure, which the county in whose care, custody, and control she presently is, does not provide. And since she is in the care, custody, and control of the county, they are legally required to provide necessary medical care. Now, Jane Doe is presently in her first trimester of pregnancy. She is early in her first trimester of pregnancy. And she does not know when she is going to be released from incarceration. So she faces the very real threat of having to be pregnant in jail or prison, and having the period of time in which she is legally allowed to pursue an abortion run out. Not by her own action or by her choice, but by the action of the county officials. The local county judge has already indicated, prejudging the case, that she would not sign an order allowing the woman to be taken to Huntsville for an abortion. One might note that this is manifestly stupid from a county fiscal policy, insofar as I'm sure even de minimis prenatal care will be more expensive, but we can't think about that in a place like Alabama, Talabama, because Jesus. So she has filed a petition with the United States District Court for the Northern District of Alabama, which is also busy hearing, Gary Wayne Hopkins' case. Now, Lauderdale County Sheriff Rick Singleton says, we're just following county, well-established county policy. Mm-hmm. So, the ACLU of Alabama, the American Civil Liberties Union, has stepped in on her behalf. In the court papers, she says she's looking for private funds to pay for the abortion so the county won't be on the hook, and that she can get transportation or be transported under supervised release. In the affidavit accompanying the petition, she says, I am very distraught, and I do not want to be forced to carry this pregnancy to term. She filed a request for temporary relief with the sheriff. 3 days later, the sheriff said, nope, you're going to have to get a court order. It is the policy of this office that all non-emergency services, and he underlined non-emergency, are provided through our medical staff at the jail. Your request cannot be handled by our staff, and on its face, it does not constitute a medical emergency. Even though, by operation of law, she has only a fixed period of time in which to terminate this pregnancy, which she does not wish to have, and is entitled, as a matter of constitutional law, to terminate. That's just one of those constitutional provisions that Lauderdale County, Alabama Sheriff Rick Singleton doesn't think really, matters. Now, if it was a matter of firearms, now the Holy Second Amendment says that everybody got a right to a firearm. Some constitutional rights are more constitutional than other constitutional rights. But it gets stranger. Oh, yes, it gets stranger. So when Jane Doe filed this petition with the federal court, among other things, the ACLU argued that, yes, her right to terminate the pregnancy is a guaranteed constitutional right. It further argues that denial of that right would constitute cruel and unusual punishment of a prisoner. Using legalese, the petition says, as the United States Supreme Court has made clear, a woman has a fundamental right to decide whether or not to bear a child. This right survives incarceration. A jail may not, therefore, deny an inmate the right to obtain a timely, safe, and legal termination of pregnancy. Now, typically, according to Randall Marshall, who's the legal director of the ACLU of Alabama, typically, the court then orders the jail to go ahead and make the necessary arrangements for the woman to have the abortion. And they understand that these things are time-sensitive because, again, a woman's constitutional right to an abortion is limited by time and by where she is within the parameters of the pregnancy. So the federal judge in Huntsville has said that the petition will be ruled on promptly. But meanwhile, because, among other things, district attorneys prosecutors are elected creatures and therefore have to play to the grandstand. Lauderdale County, Alabama, District Attorney Chris Connolly has gotten into the act. Now, technically, Chris Connolly, I suppose, would be the defense counsel in this petition, or not defense counsel, but respondents counsel on behalf of Sheriff Rick Singleton. But that's not enough. It's not enough for Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly to go into court and, you know the old saying, if you've got the law, pound on the law. If you've got the facts, pound on the facts. And if you don't have either one, pound on the table. It's not enough for Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly to go into federal court and pound on the table because he has neither the law nor the facts on his side. Oh, hell no! Because you gotta play to the serpent handlers and the, we got one of those in the news too. To the serpent handlers and the strychnine swiggers and the floor rollers and the tongue speakers and the and all the good upstanding God fearing Bible believing Christ centered Christians out there who are all worried about the little fetuses. So that they'll remember that Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly is a friend of life. Ergo, Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly has filed a petition in the Circuit Court of Lauderdale County, Alabama, to terminate not the pregnancy, but the parental rights of the Jane Doe. He claims that she is charged with chemical endangerment of a child. In support of his argument, he cites a 2013 ruling by the Alabama Supreme Court. You know, the one that Roy Moore heads. Did I say Moorhead? No, I didn't mean to. That says chemical endangerment of a child, and the statute was originally passed so that the law could deal with stupid parents who have their children around things like meth labs. But in 2013, Roy Moore's court said, that also applies to fetuses. So now, in an attempt to compel this woman to have a baby that the district attorney claims is chemically endangered, and if true, might mean the child is pre-harmed, Chris Connolly wants to force the woman to bear the child and yet have no rights to the child, even as the child gestates inside her. The court, receiving the petition and allowing the petition to be filed, which says a little something about the circuit judge in this case, not the federal judge, the county circuit judge, then required the appointment, at taxpayer expense, mind you, of a guardian ad litem for the fetus to be named later. Really? Now, the whole appoint a guardian ad litem for the fetus thing is a trend in the ongoing war, and you know I hesitate to use words like that, but it is the ongoing war against the rights of women to exercise a constitutional liberty. So now, the guardian ad litem, presumably, can dictate what our Jane Doe petitioner has for lunch. Presumably, the guardian ad litem could compel the force-feeding of our Jane Doe petitioner. Again, the case is due to be heard, and a ruling the federal judge promises will be prompt. But in the meantime, a district attorney wants to exercise the rights of a father over a born child in regard to a fetus that is at best something around, you know, a tadpole right now. But of course, if he can only force the baby to be born, at which point in time he seeks to take the baby away from the mother, Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly will not agree then to pay child support for the next 18 years of the child's life. And frankly, child welfare monies in the state of Alabama aren't exactly a matter of public largesse. Like I said, stuff we may have missed while we were freaking out about a dead lion. Yeah. And this is, you know, this is all of a part. This is all of a piece. This is a law. This operates hand in glove with the hatefulness of the anti-Planned Parenthood freaks. And their dodgy, dummied up, idiotic, crappily edited videos, of which, of course, naturally, Fox and the religion industry and et cetera, Matt Drudge and that ilk have all gone gaga over. I mean, some real interesting concepts are entering are up for our consideration in this particular case. Irish Dave says, forced feeding, don't you mean enhanced ingestion? And by the way, does that fetus have an actual biological father with parental rights and shit? Don't know. And Chris Connolly doesn't much care. And again, it's one of those things we can't know. But I'll bet you I know the skin color of the woman in question. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe not. But you gotta admit it's about 70-30, right? I mean, I wonder if the ACLU got, folks, as they were crafting this petition, I wonder if maybe they considered a 13th Amendment claim of involuntary servitude. Because this feels like a form of slavery, at least from where I contemplate it. Because she is being compelled to do something or not do something. She is compelled to be to not do being compelled to not do something which she is legally allowed to do. And she is being so compelled under color of law. And don't think for a minute that Lauderdale County District Attorney Chris Connolly came up with this one by himself. I'm quite sure that he's not that bright. Because, it follows on the heels of the appointment of the guardian ad litem for a fetus. Which, of course, is a national tactic by the people who constantly assault the right of a woman to have autonomy over her own body. I mean, what do you call it? She's being shackled with baby booties. Jack in Shreveport says, why is the cost of dealing with this issue tolerated? Because the religious right nutbags are nuttier than the greedy free market nutbags. Or, Jack, I would add that the greedy free market nutbags are the same thing as the religious right nutbags, and the religious right nutbaggery trumps greedy free market nutbaggery in their otherwise wildly cognitively dissonant what passes for minds and is otherwise just thin gray settling sloshing around between their ears. A note coming in from Barbie, going back to the beating of Gary Wayne Hawkins. Barbie says, I got my first introduction to cops beating a man in handcuffs who was inebriated when I worked as a respiratory therapist, and key essential personnel had a key to zip us up to the sixth floor, where a critical care unit was and the ICU was located. I could hear the entire fight up to the psych ward with the guy getting the holy crap beat out of him by four police officers. The nurses and me were asked to exit the elevator. I, needless to say, was mortified because he was cuffed behind his back and had nowhere to go. I had never experienced hearing anything on the level of this kind of brutality. This was Mercy Hospital in Mason City in Iowa. I still get tears at my eyes, in my eyes at the beating that man took. I believe his only crime was drunk and disorderly. Changed my life and thinking forever. I was 29 years old and 5 months pregnant. As they were pushing me out the elevator, the police said it was for my own protection. Oh, I think it was a little bit for theirs, too, don't you, Barbie? You didn't want to be a witness in that. So that's a starting place as we examine stuff we may have missed while freaking out over a dead lion. And this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, there is a ton more. We joke about hockey pucks and duct tapes or duct tape around here. There's a duct tape story. Mm-hmm. So we'll take a little break. The lines are open if you wish to join in the conversation. The phone numbers, area code 304-574-8178. The stress line, named in permanent memory of our dear friend, departed though he may be, Bill Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And you're welcome to jump in, hopefully with something interesting to the rest of the Horn family, commune, congregation. And we are trying to raise $299, $299.00, during the remainder of the program, which is about 2 hours and 5 minutes. It being a Thursday and all, we've got the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always enjoy that. I hope you do as well. So, it being conversation radio, let's conversate. Or else, I can always, filibobster. That works too. Listener supported, this is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Them that's got shall have, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Yes, the strong gets more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grave. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own money. You've got lots of friends. They're crowding round your door. But when you're gone and spending it, they don't come no more. Rich relations give, crust the bread and such. You can help yourself, but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Money, you've got lots of friends. They're crowding around your door. But when you're gone and spending ends, they don't come no more. Rich relations give, crust of bread and such. You can help yourself, but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. He just don't worry about nothing, 'cause he's got his own.
It's Thursday, July 30th, 2015. Well, if you thought you'd seen the last of those Chi activists, think again. They are back, this time in Portland.
Oregon activists suspend from a bridge to stop Arctic drilling.
Yeah, oh, my gosh, go.
Hey, Larry,
like, no, fast, Dad, go.
Wildfire season explodes across the West, while a new study finds wildfires are getting worse around the world. Plus...
Then killed it with a weapon of some kind, and then they severed the head as a trophy.
The killing of Cecil the Lion ignites a firestorm over big game trophy hunting.
All of those firestorms and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A nuclear Iran is going to be the least of our problems instead of everything else. Iranian nukes will be a break from swimming through our climate change flooded cities, fighting Ebola zombies with our teeth, because we can't hold guns thanks to our iPhone shaped hand tumors.
Maybe I should get an Android phone. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a day or two ago, a U.S. senator from North Dakota claimed that during the August recess of Congress, Barack Obama was going to reject the Keystone XL pipeline. Was that senator making it up, or is there actually some basis in fact for that claim?
Well, it looks like he was kind of making it up, because the White House says they are going to make a decision, but probably not over the August recess.
So this was just a matter of him ginning up his constituents before the August recess?
That's kind of what it looks like.
All right, but if Obama does reject it over the August recess, I expect you to apologize to that U.S. senator.
Okay, I guess I will. But let's get on to the real news. In the U.S., the West is on fire with what is shaping up to be the worst fire season on record. In the week or so since a fast-moving wildfire engulfed people's cars on a California highway, wildfires across the West have exploded due to record drought and record hot temperatures. In Alaska and across Canada, literally hundreds of wildfires are active, and in Alaska specifically, fires of all sizes have burned nearly 5 million acres, putting this year on track so far to be Alaska's worst fire season ever. At Melting Glacier National Park in Montana, it is peak tourist season, but a wildfire there has forced evacuations of campgrounds, with this family barely escaping.
Oh my gosh, go.
Hey, Larry, go,
go now. Go.
Go.
Go. Like, yeah, no, go. Fast, Dad, go. Holy go.
That video is absolutely amazing. It may not be clear on audio, but check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com to take a look at that amazing video as his family outran this fire in their car.
Yeah, and now a groundbreaking new study from the U.S. Forest Service concludes that since 1979, global warming has increased the length of fire weather seasons across the planet by 20%. And it's also increased what the scientists call the planet's burnable areas. That has more than doubled over the same period of time.
So both the areas have doubled and the length of time that the fire season actually goes on?
Yeah.
Oh, but 20%.
That's a lot.
Amazing.
All of these wildfires are creating a self-reinforcing feedback loop. Global warming intensifies the wildfires. Wildfires, in turn, intensify global warming. When the trees burn, they're releasing carbon into the atmosphere. And now, scientists say the wildfires in Alaska are so intense, they're melting the permafrost, and that's releasing even more carbon. The persistent high temperatures are also killing salmon in rivers in the Pacific Northwest. Persistent high river temperatures that game officials say have already killed thousands of salmon this season alone. In Portland, Oregon, Greenpeace activists in climbing harnesses suspended themselves from a major bridge in a bid to protect the Arctic from Shell oil. The aerial protest temporarily blocked a Shell drilling ship from leaving Portland's harbor after repairs. Shell can't legally proceed with drilling in the Arctic until that ship is on site. And although they won't be able to stop the drilling altogether, the protesters say every delay buys the Arctic some time.
And what makes you think Shell cares about doing things legally, Desi Doyen? Why start now?
Finally, growing outrage around the world after an American dentist killed a famous lion in Africa. The lion, named Cecil, was a major tourist draw in Zimbabwe, and officials say the dentist and his hunting guides illegally lured Cecil, a protected lion fitted with a research collar, outside of the safety of his national park refuge boundaries. The dentist paid over $50,000 for the treat and says he regrets killing Cecil, and now he faces potential criminal charges. The killing has renewed debate over the ethics of big game trophy hunts as a wildlife conservation tool, according to George Whitmire, a conservation biologist at Colorado State University on KPFK Radio.
There's recognition that this is a problem, and this is a particularly poignant example of it that's really struck a chord with the public.
Not just here in the U.S., but around the world.
Yes.
What a terrible story. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Six minutes past the hour, we are into hour number two for this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn.
I'm Bob.
Hi. And, well, let's continue onward with stuff we may have missed while we were freaking out about a deadline. The dateline is Songkhla, Thailand. And this is part of at least I've read three parts so far. Three-part series of some pretty serious journalism by the folks over at the New York Times. Ian Urbina is the reporter on the story. Sea slaves, forced labor for cheap fish. Oh, wait, before we go there, another remark. Our buddy the Angry Indian wrote in a moment ago regarding the story of the woman in Lauderdale County, Alabama, being forced against her will to carry a fetus. Angry says, Brother Bob, what you're describing is the 21st century version of slave lease, meaning the Negro's body does not belong to him or her. It is the property of the European settler state, and can be sold and traded at the discretion of the white racialist, given authority over said Negroes. Now, to be fair, like I said, and I don't disagree with Angry. Like I said, we don't know the ethnicity of the Jane Doe petitioner in this case, and yet somehow or another, just reading the basic facts of it, we are somehow, well, we find it not at all difficult to surmise the skin tone of the victim. And by victim, I mean the incarcerated woman who is being denied her constitutional right, which, as the ACLU notes, is not exterminated by incarceration. But it says something that we think we're pretty sure we know the woman's ethnicity, because it does fit exactly within the parameters of what Angry just described. Fish. I got a cat. You got a cat? A lot of us have cats. We like our cats. We try to take care of our cats. There are, and I'm not going to wander off into some sort of George effing Will digression like he does with baseball on the social implications of pet ownership, except I think I am. When I go to get cat food, I have taken to purchasing cat food for our little Siamese, of whom I am insanely fond. She occasionally even acknowledges my existence. And I've taken to purchasing cat food that is, you're told when you, on the front of the bag, that it contains no fillers, none of the stuff that cats aren't really meant to eat. And it costs a little more, yeah. But it seems like her coat's a little glossier. She's a little more filled out, and she certainly goes at it with much more gusto. And then this. In the New York Times. This is one of those classic cases that reminds us that part of the essential genius of capitalism is A, the fact that it is able, by virtue of its pervasiveness, to compel us all, or almost all of us, to participate in it. And B, that it also separates us from the production process. Like I just said, until I read this article, the beginning and ending of my cat food inquiry was label reading, for which I am notorious in all instances, label reading in the pet food aisle. Ash content, protein, that kind of stuff. That's as far as it went. We've talked about label reading over in the meat aisle, where thanks to international free trade agreements, sometime in the near future, Americans will no longer be able to know, yeah, where that meat done come from. By the way, I got to thinking about that. We were talking about it the other night. Word choice matters in sloganeering. And the next wave in upscale trendy meat consumption will be single bovine burger. Yeah. Took a while. They have the cat food. Cats like fish, don't they? Sure they do. I mean, even to the point of cartoon representations of poor old Sylvester out there with a garbage can lid for a tray, rummaging through the trash and picking up whole fish skeletons. Yeah. Well, Ian Urbina writes, Long Long's ordeal began in the back of a truck. After watching his younger siblings go hungry because their family's rice patch in Cambodia could not provide for everyone, and of course one wonders why that is, whether it's a matter of overpopulation or maybe climate change-induced production decreases, that sort of thing. One doesn't know. He accepted a trafficker's offer to travel across the Thai border for a construction job. It was his chance to start over. But when he arrived, Mr. Long was kept for days by armed men in a room near the port at Samut Prakan, more than a dozen miles southeast of Bangkok. He was then herded with six other migrants up a gangway into a shoddy wooden ship. It was the start of three brutal years in captivity at sea. I cried, said Mr. Long, 30, recounting how he was resold twice between fishing boats. After repeated escape attempts, one captain shackled him by the neck. whenever other boats neared. Here's where we have to start paying attention. Mr. Long's crews trawled primarily for forage fish, which are small and cheaply priced. Much of this catch comes from the waters off Thailand, where Mr. Long was held, and is sold to the United States, typically for canned cat and dog food or feed for poultry, pigs, and farm-raised fish that Americans consume. The misery endured by Mr. Long, who was eventually rescued by an aid group, is not uncommon in the maritime world. Labor abuse at sea can be so severe that the boys and men who are its victims might as well be captives from a bygone era. In interviews, those who fled recounted horrific violence, the sick cast overboard, the defiant beheaded, the insubordinate sealed for days below deck in a dark, fetid fishing hold. The harsh practices have intensified in recent years. A review of hundreds of accounts from escaped deckhands provided to police, immigration, and human rights workers shows. That's because of lax maritime labor laws and an insatiable global demand for seafood, even as fishing stocks are depleted. Cat food. We are depleting world supplies of fish for cat food and dog food and feed for poultry, pigs, and farm-raised fish that Americans consume. Now, that's not to say that people in other nations of the world don't consume it. It's just that we consume harder, faster, and more intensely, I think, than just about any other nation on earth. And the manufacturers, recognizing there's a buck to be made, we have looped our pets into this process. Now, do you suppose it was the same way in the 17th century, the 18th century, the 19th century? How long has this been going on? And why is it we rely upon slaves in the dank, fetid holds of rickety fishing vessels off the Thai coast to get this done? To get the forage fish for little Sylvester. Yep, I understand. I mean, you can't just throw a handful of Fritos down and expect the cat to eat it. But in a bygone era, cats served a purpose. They were ratters. The ancient Egyptians revered them. One presumes because they were probably pretty handy at keeping down the, again, rats and snakes and scorpions and the like. And I am not—I do not wish in any sense at all to be seen as saying people shouldn't have pets. Our animal companions are special indeed. But I think this is more than a story about human rights abuses and cat food. Life at sea is cheap, said Phil Robertson, who is not the Phil Robertson of Duck Doofus fame, but rather, in fact, is Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division. And conditions out there keep getting worse. Gee, I wonder why. While forced labor exists throughout the world, Nowhere is the problem more pronounced than here in the South China Sea, especially in the Thai fishing fleet, which faces an annual shortage of about 50,000 mariners based on United Nations estimates. The shortfall is primarily filled by using migrants, mostly from Cambodia and Myanmar. Many of them, like Mr. Long, are lured across the border by traffickers only to become so-called sea slaves in floating labor camps. I couldn't help reading this article without thinking, I wonder if those human rights provisions in the Trans-Pacific Partnership will address any of this. And then you know what I did? I went, no. Because within the confines of a free trade agreement, I don't care how many human rights provisions they put in it. Human rights are the last thing anyone is thinking about. Often the sea slaves are beaten for the smallest transgressions like stitching a torn net too slowly or mistakenly placing a mackerel into a bucket for herring. Because you see, the United Nations has surveyed about 50 Cambodian men and boys who were sold to Thai fishing boats. Of the 50 surveyed, 29 said they had witnessed their captain or other officers kill a worker. If there is any upside to this story, it is back up there where it says that the cat food is canned. Doesn't say anything about dry. So maybe that's an option. But that little frisky seafood feast? Maybe not. Who knows? There may be a little bit of ground-up Cambodian finger in that. The migrants, who are relatively invisible because most are undocumented, disappear beyond the horizon on ghost ships, unregistered vessels that the Thai government does not know exist. You know, the Thai government does not, wink, wink, know, wink, wink, exist, wink, wink. Because freedom. I wonder, and this is just the kind of stuff I think about when I read this sort of thing. I ask myself, gee, Bob, what would the libertarian response to this be? How would a free market libertarianeer solve this problem? Answer, it wouldn't. Because libertarianism doesn't give a damn. And the free market doesn't give a damn. And if you will consult the mercifully still dead Milton Friedman, you'll find that he didn't give a damn, because the last thing to be considered in the capitalist libertarian anarcho-capitalism worldview is the dignity or the rights or even the life of the worker, because life is cheap. Government intervention is rare. While United Nations pacts and various human rights protections prohibit forced labor, the Thai military and law enforcement authorities do little to counter misconduct on the high seas. Think about those tourists from all over the world sitting there on those exquisite beaches, and just out of sight over the horizon, here's a 13-year-old kid losing a finger. When the mechanical reel for a fishing net catches him up in it. Migrants often report being rescued by police officers from one smuggler, only to be resold by the same police officer to another smuggler. At that point, I don't think they're police officers. I think they're brokers. Now we get into the numbers. One of the largest canneries there in Thailand is the Songkhla Canning Public Company. It, in turn, thanks to corporate structural legal structures, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Thai Union Frozen Products. Thai Union Frozen Products is the largest seafood company in Thailand. This story reports that in the last year, Thai Union Frozen Products has shipped more than 28 million pounds of seafood-based cat and dog food for some of the top brands sold in America. And I'm not trying to be accusatory in any of this, because the names you're about to hear, I have purchased thinking I was doing the absolute best I could by our beloved family pets. Imes, Meow Mix, Fancy Feast, and of course Yukonuba is closely associated with Imes, is it not? You know, and Imes and Yukonuba, these are the brands that are purchased by people with bumper stickers on the backs of their car that show the various symbols of the great world religions forming the word coexist. Thai fish for pet food exports have doubled since 2009. The value on those 28 million pounds, $190 million. The average cat in the United States, and wow, this one kind of blew me away. The average cat in the United States eats 30 pounds of fish per year. And that's about twice as much as the typical American. And if that's twice as much as the typical American, it's probably about four times as much as, say, the average starving human on planet Earth. Now, there's really good detail in this article. 18 to 20-hour work days, rain or shine, 7 days a week. Yeah. And we're talking about children. We're talking about 10, 12, 13-year-old boys in many instances. Now, mind you, these are boys that the pro-life Christians in America couldn't give a tinker's damn about, being as how they're all wrong colored and everything. When it's time to take the haul back into the cannery, the workers are deliberately marooned on little islands or atolls with little food and very little water, you know, to make sure that they don't get uppity the ships don't waste any money on things like antibiotics for cuts and scrapes and various and sundry other wounds associated with this kind of work. When a worker gets sick, if they're too sick to get well, well, overboard they go. And somebody cues up that Disney song about the circle of life. The author continues, indentured servitude, a travel now, pay later labor system where people work to clear a debt typically accrued for getting free passage to another country, is common in the developing world, especially in construction, agriculture, manufacturing, and the sex industry. Gee, that's pretty much everything, isn't it? It is more pervasive and abusive at sea, human rights experts say, because those workers are so isolated. And the fun part about indentured servitude is you can never pay off the debt. Trenchant observation by chat room moderator Lottie. Bob, our trade agreements will bring those fantastic working conditions here. You know, to the extent that they aren't already. It's fascinating, though, because I went through this entire article, and it's a long one. I mean, the Times, in its print edition, must have devoted a whole bunch of column inches to this. I mean, my God, just contemplate this. I mean, this is, I know it may seem silly for me to put it this way, but this is happening on the same planet with us. Because, you know, we used to think of a different country as, you know, but no, this is on the same planet. These are the same humans. These are people who share the same chromosomal structure as us. Oh my God, did you hear they killed a lion? Fishing boat workers on an Indonesian island called Benjina were kept in cages to prevent them from fleeing. Inaccessible by boat several months a year because of monsoons, Benjina had an airstrip that was rarely used and no phone or internet service. Like I said, this is a very long article and there were follow-ups. Read them too. Horrifying. And frankly, I don't know a lot about what I can do personally, because again, that's what I mentioned going into this discussion. Namely, one of the beauties of capitalism is that it compels your participation. I'm reading. I'm trying to find out. Critics say Thailand is deliberately failing to confront the larger causes of abuse in fishing. Among other things, Thailand has less stringent rules on how long boats can remain at sea. It was the only country to vote against a UN treaty on forced labor requiring governments to punish traffickers until the rest of the international community sort of publicly shamed them. But hey, they did come up with a possible solution. Maybe one of their American friends suggested it to them. At one point, the Thai government said, well, okay, we can reduce migrant labor abuses by using prison labor. And the folks in Colorado said, great idea. You reckon we might be able to get you a contract with Whole Foods? Thailand currently holds the lowest ranking by the State Department of governments that do not meet minimum standards in countering human trafficking. But, of course, we're not going to let that interfere with, you know, the profits. And that's the thing about this very long article. Very long, fascinating article. You know, there's a lot of words in here. I would say probably thousands. Thousands. But there's one word that isn't anywhere in this article. I wanted to make sure about, because when I read it the first time, I got to the end, where's that word? And I went back and read the son of a gun again. And the word is definitely not in there. Kind of made me wonder if maybe the word is banned in the newsroom there at the New York Times. I mean, it's like Beetlejuice. Within the universe of this story, not having this word in the story is like reading a historical article about the 1918 influenza epidemic and not seeing the word virus. Anybody? Anybody know the word that isn't in this article? Anybody want to guess? A contract from a manpower agency in Singapore provided to the New York Times committed deckhands to a three-year tour during which the agency retained the full $200 per month for the first 6 months and $150 per month thereafter. Daily working hours will be around 18 hours, the contract stipulates, adding that there is no overtime pay. Boats may remain at sea for longer than a year per trip. Only seawater may be used for bathing and laundry. Mariners can be traded from boat to boat at the captain's discretion. All biscuits, noodles, soft drinks, and cigarettes are to be purchased by the sailor. Any crew who breaches the contract, own sickness, lazy, or rejected by the captain, must bear all the expenses incurred in going back home. No, not slavery. Not slave. I mean, we've got indentured servitude in there. We're talking about a process whereby boys are lured away with the promise of the bright lights of the big city and action and blah 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 blah, money, lured away from the farms of the interior of Cambodia to a life on the rough and lusty sea, hauling in nets full of garbage fish, which are then processed and turned into cat food and sent to the United States of America, where we feed it to our kitty cats and our dogs, and it's fed to the pigs that come from maybe Smithfield Meats and the hams that we serve at our holidays. Capitalism! Capitalism! That's the word that isn't in this article anywhere. That's the word that I suspect even the muttering of it in the newsroom of the New York Times will get your happy little journalist ass fired? Capitalism! Devin got it. Capitalism. It's the whole reason for this. It's the only way that human beings are shanghaied into a production process that swaps human lives for cat food in the United States of America. Capitalism! Lottie in the chat room says, Bob, it's understood. I don't think it's understood in the New York Times. I mean, the New York Times is a newspaper for people who can read on, you know, like a ninth grade level instead of the sixth grade level that most newspapers are written at, he said, ending the sentence in at. But we dare not mention beloved, precious capitalism as the root cause of every single abuse that is documented in this article, and since this article does not identify the root cause, the likelihood of any kind of solution becomes near non-existent. Just not there. Sasinan Almond, the head of corporate communications for Thai Union Frozen Products, said that her company does routine audits of its canneries and boats in port to ensure against forced and child labor. The audits involve checking crew members' contracts, passports, proof of payment, and working conditions. We will not tolerate any human trafficking or any human rights violation of any kind, she said. Asked whether audits are conducted on the fishing boats that stay at sea, like the one where Mr. Long was captive, she declined to respond. Mm-hmm. By the way, the contracts. We mentioned the contracts up there a little bit. You know, it's funny, though, there's a subheading inside the story called Supply and Demand. But back up there, the business about the contract. Only seawater to be used for bathing and laundry. Boats, mariners, you know, slaves, to be traded from boat to boat at the captain's discretion. One of the big talked about things last night was the pitcher, the Mets, the New York Mets pitcher, who was apprised of a rumor in mid-game and was seen on the mound weeping. Because a social media rumor said that he was about to be traded away from his beloved Mets, with whom he'd been part of the organization since he was 16 years old. Oddly enough, I recognized something in all of that contract language. All biscuits, noodles, soft drinks, and cigarettes be purchased by the sailor. Any crew who breaches the contract, owns sickness, lazy, or rejected by the captain must bear all the expenses incurred in going back home. That seemed, from a historical standpoint, strikingly familiar to me. Because we've had that here. Who do you think taught the Thai fishing industry, these practices? Do you think they just came up with it on their own? Do you think that this was something that was going on back when King Chulalongkorn was running Siam, as it was called at the time? I'm sure you're familiar with the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The King and I. Mrs. Anna Leonowens, attempting to bring Christian education to the heathen court of the Siamese king. Well, that was about the British Empire trying to get its foothold in Southeast Asia, right next to the French, in what was then French Indochina. But we taught these lessons. When my great-grandfather became a coal miner and signed on with the coal company, didn't have any money. Nobody had any money. That's how the coal economy got going. Nobody had any money, and consequently, you had to go to work for the coal company in order for you and your family not to starve. So if you're going to be a coal miner, you'd need a helmet. The coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the helmet. You'd need a carbide lamp and the carbide to put in it, and the coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the carbide and the carbide lamp. You'd need a pick, and the coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the pick. You'd need a shovel, and the coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the shovel. And you'd need work clothes, and the coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the work clothes. You'd need a good sturdy pair of serviceable boots, and the coal company would, by God, advance you the cost of the boots. You'd need food for your hungry children, and the coal company would gladly advance you the cost of the food. They'd advance you housing. And here's the deal. Now, you weren't paid by the hour or anything, mind you. You were paid by the ton. And you sat there working at the face. You know, they'd tunnel in, drill a hole in the coal, stick a charge, dynamite, deep into the coal, light the fuse, run away, and then load the coal into the cars, and the cars, dragged by mules, would be hauled out of the coal mine. At the entrance, or at the junctions of tunnels and things, little boys, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, called trappers, well, they would open the door for the mule to go through with the coal cart. And their boots and their clothes and their helmet and their lamp would be advanced by the coal company. And then, when payday rolled around, just no matter how many tons of coal you had loaded, when payday rolled around, your paycheck would be something called snake. And what that meant was your name would be on the check, say, Lonnie Kincaid. But on the line where it would say, pay to the order of Lonnie Kincaid, the amount line, instead of saying $17.32, no, it would just be a straight line across, a snake. We taught them this. There's a brilliant culture that rose and existed for hundreds of years. And in fact, human cultures for thousands of years in that region. And it did not rely upon little slave boys out beyond the horizon for a year at a time, never hearing from their family or loved ones again. That's not to say slavery didn't exist. But not on this scale. Not on a scale where they need 50,000 slaves per year to provide cat food to the United States of America. No. I wonder how much cat food France consumes. How about Japan? How much cat food is consumed in the People's Republic of China? We taught them this. And of course, every individual has a contractual relationship with the company. And if you try to raise your voice or get up on your hind legs like a human being about it, you will be slapped right down. And remember, that contractual relationship controls all. Because, especially in a place like the United States, a contractual relationship is the second most sacred thing one can be involved with, second only to the personal relationship one has with the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who has no jurisdiction over contracts and can only help your dead ass out when your ass is dead. It's that sacred privity of contract that so many libertarians and right-wingers and Republicans want to go back to when they say that the Supreme Court correctly decided Lochner versus New York. Mm-hmm. And all of these things are predicated upon capitalism. Every last one. And it is stuff that white Europeans invented and Euro-Americans promulgated around the globe. And it is ubiquitous, and it seems inescapable. Michael got it in Madison. Capitalism, is that the word? It's got to be. It's got to be, Michael. It's got to be. It's the only possibility. That's not communism at work down there in the South China Sea. Oh, no. It isn't anarchism. It isn't a Mondragon cooperative at work in the South China Sea. It's capitalism. And it's not the rugged individualism of the tough Yankee sailor heading out from Mystic Seaport to face the rigors of the North Atlantic to bring in the cod. It's not even the factory crab farming of deadliest catch. Or that tuna boat show. I even wonder if those are diversions to make us think that that's where it all comes from. I've wondered for a lot of years when I'm over in the Kroger and I'm you know, sort of looking, not purchasing, shrimp, and I see product of Thailand. And I think, you know, that can't be good. Little or nothing in the way of environmental laws. And that's where my mind went, environmental. You know, who God only knows what those shrimp are growing in. Or what industrial complex is pouring filth and toxins into the area where the shrimp are. That's where my mind went because, well, I guess I'm selfish. My mind didn't go to, gee, I wonder who's harvesting the shrimp. And then there's the question that Devin asks. How much cat food in the U.S. is actually consumed by cats as opposed to the poor, the old, the disabled, the children, and so forth? That question was answered years back by our dear friend Kate on the Front Range. She said cat food is far too expensive. Poor folk eat canned salmon and canned mackerel, 2 for $1. At the Big Lots. We've scarcely even touched that article. And there are two more behind it. I highly recommend it. I would suggest maybe not reading it while Puss Puss is in the room. Three minutes before the hour, we'll take a little break. Carol got us down below the $300 mark. We are at $299 even to come even with fundraising as we try to squeeze our way out of July. We are still at $299. If we don't knock a little bit out of this tomorrow, it will be $499. And there's just not a miracle every week. A lot easier if we all pitch in to make this number go down. Hopefully, Carol might get a few, you know, folks standing side by side with her. Would be helpful. Lines are open for conversation if you wish to join in on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. 304-574-8178 is the first number. The stress line is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And they all work equally well if you wish to jump in, or I can just fill a Bobster for a third hour. It's entirely up to you. Again, a break, and then we'll persist. Listener-supported conversation radio is what this is. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's a very ancient saying, but a true and honest thought, that if you become a teacher, by your pupils you'll be taught. As a teacher, I've been learning. You forgive me if I boast. And I've now become an expert on the subject I like most, getting to know you.
getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea. Getting to know you, getting to feel free and easy. When I am with you, getting to know what to say. Haven't you noticed? Suddenly I'm bright and breezy because of all the beautiful and new things I'm learning about you day by day. Getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea. Getting to know you, getting to feel free and easy. When I am with you, getting to know what to say. Haven't you noticed? Suddenly I'm bright and breezy because of all the beautiful and new things I'm learning about you.
After which we have seen the civilized English lady have her young civilized English son teach the crown prince, the brown child, that one does not shake hands with a lady, but that one does then bow, and then teaching the brown royal female how to curtsy like a civilized English lady. You know, once you've learned a little bit about cultural brutality, you can find it all over the place. All you got to do is have your eyes open. Getting to know you, how you were kidnapped and taken fishing. Getting to know you, how your brother was thrown overboard. Getting to know you, how you're supporting the cat food industry, because our cats... Oh, shut up, Bob. I should know better than to sing. No, that was not Julie Andrews singing. That was actually a woman by the name of Marnie Nixon. And her voice was dubbed in over Deborah Kerr. Right. Let's check in at the phones and see what's on Jim's mind. Hey, Jim.
Meow.
Meow.
How are you?
Oh. Yeah, you know, you've probably got a pretty good idea what stories like that do to me.
Well, I know. I don't think they're good for your blood pressure or your blood sugar, but, I mean, you know, you just don't get upset. That's not good for
you. Well, you know, Fancy Feast is pretty low sugar, so, no, that was awful.
Well, yeah. You know, number one, I've always liked King and I. I thought it was the Yul Brynner thing and South Pacific. And I
Rodgers and Hammerstein were magnificent. And that's a, you know, that's an age of, and you know what, Rodgers and Hammerstein and Rodgers and Hart, they actually tried to raise a little bit, you know, without hitting anybody over the head with it, they tried to raise a little bit of cultural awareness.
Oh, yes, they did. Absolutely. I mean, their work was absolutely brilliant, and it certainly brightened the Broadway stage, and a lot of their stuff is constantly being brought back. It's just incredible. And I've always enjoyed them. And, you know, when I think it was Juanita Hall, the woman who played Bloody Mary in South Pacific, I think they overdubbed her, too, with somebody else's voice.
It wouldn't be her. Wouldn't be surprising, but, because, you know, the film version, you know, you got a big screen and you got to have the right look. And, you know, hey, you can always add the right voice in. And they were very carefully dubbed, too, so you really couldn't tell.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that lady who played Bloody Mary in the South Pacific film, I think it came out in 1958, was just incredible. She really was. Juanita Hall, I believe, is her name, as I said before. And, again, my tribute to Billie Holiday.
Well, that again seemed like an appropriate little closure to those particular stories.
Well, you know, when the things they did to her, and
well, didn't she die handcuffed to her hospital bed?
Yeah, and I think that she basically her real name was Eleanor Fagan, and I think she was from St. Louis, and she initially worked in a brothel. Now, I'm drawing this from the film that by Diana Ross, Lady Sing the Blues.
Right.
Which really brought that whole thing to heart. But the only place where she was allowed to even sing after they revoked her cabaret license was in Provincetown. And, of course, there were a lot of people there who took her.
She was born in Philly.
Was it Philly?
Yep.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'm getting that mistake, but I thought it was St. Louis. But nonetheless, I know that her real name was Eleanor Fagan, and she escaped from very low circumstances and, you know, would have had a wonderful career. I hate the fact she got hooked up with Harry James, because I understand, and I'm not sure about this, that he may have gotten her hooked on smack. I don't know. But a lot of these black entertainers were just so mistreated. Dorothy Dandridge. I can't think of the rest, because I really don't want to, you know, think about that, because it was just so bad, and how they were put down. And there's a film about another black entertainer who had her own train. And I can't remember her name, and I just saw it. I guess the gray cells aren't working too well. But, you know, pursuant to your thing about cat food, and I just sent you an email. I had a vet, and I trusted him greatly. He said, do not, under any circumstances, feed your cats any form of fish, period. He said, cats are desert animals. Their feeding habits have been imposed by man upon them, and it causes all types of renal failure and GI problems. And I will not have a can of any canned fish in this house.
Well, I know for instance that, and I know some people think that they're giving their cats a treat by opening a can of tuna for them, but there's a feline disease called rubber jaw.
Right.
That they can get from eating canned fish. Now, but on the other hand, anybody who's ever had a cat and lived anywhere near a pond, lake, river, stream, whatever body of water, knows that they will go down and go fishing.
Well, that's just their nature. They are predatory animals, and they hunt by nature. They hunt anything. I mean, look from the creatures from which they are descended. I mean, they are carnivores, and, you know, I guess when a cat sees something swimming underneath the water, it's going to try to grab it out with its paw because that's just their nature.
Well, and anybody who's ever had one, especially an outdoor cat, has probably, and I know I've seen it on a number of occasions, you know, you walk out on the front stoop in the morning and there's a lovely little offering of some small field animal or a frog, nicely dissected even.
Oh, yeah, they and will bring you gifts.
With the proud feline sitting there saying, well, you know, if you're not going to eat it.
Yeah. By the way, Shady Lady at the vet, she had some hair mats that got, she's a Norwegian forest cat. And so they did the blood work on her, all the blood panels, and she's 18, but her blood work is perfect. So now they're going to have to shave off part of her coat. And I know she is going to come home, God willing, if she does, pissed off as hell.
Yeah, that's, no, she's not going to like that.
I told the lady today when I called the clinic, I said, listen, I said, if you can spare any of that shaving and not do a total Yul Brynner type thing, I would appreciate it. And I just said to her, ma'am, I said, I know how you ladies are so fond of your hair, and she is fond of hers.
You did not play that card. You did.
I did. Why not?
Oh, I think everybody's kind of fond of their hair. I think everybody's kind of fond of their hair. I mean, you know, you'll Brynner accepted, of course. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I mean, at her age, I mean, you know, anything can happen, but I was amazed to hear the report of the blood panels and stuff. She was born right below where I am now because I took her mother in when she was pregnant. And, I mean, I saw her the day that she literally was born. I was up all night with her mother.
Well,
helping her deliver. And she means an awful lot, and it's been.
Now, she's nowhere near the size of Rupert, is she?
No. And so, but how that hair got matted like that, well, because when long-haired cats get a little age on them, they don't pay as much attention to the grooming as they normally do. And, you know, to anyone who has a long-haired cat at any age, you know, you need to keep them brushed. And I had neglected that for a week or so because I've had some other problems of my own and just couldn't see it because the hair's so thick. But, I mean, just please keep them brushed and stuff like that, and they'll do a lot better, and they won't have to undergo any type of Paris Island haircut. And so
I just
asked them, you know, and somebody said, well, take her to a groomer. And I said, no, I don't think so. Not at her age. I'm not going to do that. She's going to have work up anyway. So, went through that and just hope she'll come back and not too angry with me and will be better. Well, but like I say, I just wanted to get that thing in about feeding cats fish because, like I say, that's something that cartoons and stuff have imposed upon man. And Bob, I'll tell you, I don't care for fish. I can't stand the way it smells. And if you opened up a can of tuna in my house, one of us would have to leave. And the person who left would be carrying the tuna with it, probably in a lower posterior of their anatomy. I mean, I just can't stand the smell of it. It just makes me absolutely ill. And so I'm glad that that gave me that advice. But the research does indicate that it does cause some of those problems. And I just keep them to chicken and beef and stuff like that and cat food, but slow ash. They are your children. At least they're my children, and you got to treat them as such. At least I try to. And I did catch up on the Donald.
I heard a little bit of that, about that earlier today, and it's like, good God.
Well, I mean, that shows you exactly the sensitivity of that man. I mean, this female attorney was deposing him back in, I think, 2011, and obviously needed to have a breast pump, I guess, to feed her child that she just had. And he just started screaming at her and started screaming horrible things at her.
Well, it wasn't that she was doing that in front of him.
No, not at all.
But that's what he claimed, and which sort of goes to prove that he's, you know, a liar.
And not to mention the fact that he had no great affection because he happened to win in that case, and he won like $400,000. And so he had basically had it in for this woman for a long time because I really think he gets it in for anybody whom he, in his own bizarre fashion,
he is at the very least a sociopath, okay? And that's not a word I just fling around, Jim.
No.
He's that. And I have some misgivings about even talking about him, Jim, because it feels like I'm giving him free publicity. And God knows if anybody could afford to support the Horn, it's that jackass. But stuff is being said. It's like the internet concept of link bait. Okay, he's out there trolling, just trying to generate controversy and notice, you know, just notice.
Well,
so,
you know, it's,
so the breast milk business, you know, sure, he's an odious human being. The fact that some of that's borne out in one of his divorces is more than apparent, in which his lawyer argued, now, it's impossible for a husband to rape a wife.
He treats his women, or has tried to treat them, like chattels. I know he did get a hold of one. I think her name was Ivanka, who said, you know, don't get mad, get even. I think she took him for a spin or two. But, you know, basically, this guy is a bottom feeder. He really is. And that's the only thing I can say about him. That's my term for Donald Trump. He is nothing but a bottom feeder. And that's the kind of stuff he just scarfs up on. And I listened to some of the people who supported him and how they admired his business acumen. And they needed a man like that who was not a politician, but a man of the people who was an accomplished businessman and this, that, and the other. Of course, they never really went into or delved into his business dealings and past bankruptcies and things like that. I think the only person I can equate him with is another woman. I think her name was Leona Helmsley. Boy, she was a piece of work, wasn't she?
Oh, the Queen of Mean?
Oh, God.
Was she the Queen of Mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the latest, of course, is that he flew off to Scotland where, and one wonders what got into there. I guess he owns what used to be, or is it?
St. Andrews?
No. The Women's British Open is being held at Turnberry, Scotland, and once upon a time, one of the British Open courses was Royal Turnberry. And I can't imagine that they sold off Royal Turnberry to Trump, but he's got a course at Turnberry, so he shows up there today. And actually, Jim, I thought of you this morning when I was seeing the clip where he announced that he was quite certain that he and Vladimir Putin would get along famously, just fine.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Not at all. They are the same ilk and possess of the same, you know, mindset, or whatever you want to call it. Of course, when the British sell stuff off, my God, look at the British royalty back in the 19th century. how much do they sell off to American millionaires who went over there to rescue their estates from being divided up? Because that's what a lot of them, you know, were in store for, with taxation and stuff like that, and failure of agriculture. So you had a lot of American millionaires who were married off to dukes and counts and no accounts. A lot of them, or most of them, were no accounts, but who basically, you know, the British have been known just, if you've got the money, they've got the time.
Without a doubt.
So,
but it's, I mean, he also announced today that I'm leading among the Hispanic vote. Ain't you surprised? And,
yeah,
of course, it turned
true.
Out to be an unscientific, bogus poll by some bunch of probably Clive and Bundy supporters in Nevada.
Yeah. I guess he was about as popular. He's about as popular with those people as Cortez was, you know. But honestly, truly, well, I saw that thing and hit you about it last night before you went off the air. And then I saw some stuff on about him. But, you know, the thing about it is he's at 26%. Now, I don't know how he's going to do anything in the next is it New Hampshire is the next one?
Well, I mean, there haven't been any primaries yet. The first one is New Hampshire, then there's the Iowa caucuses, and then there's South Carolina.
Well, I understand that he may have a problem because he really doesn't have any, like, field service out there.
Oh, but he'll build it. And right now, as it stands, it's kind of like watching. And I know sport is not your oeuvre, but it's like watching teams vie for the wild card slot in the playoffs, because everybody's trying to get into that top 10. And John Kasich just inched into it today. But the top three are Trump, and then Scott Walker, and then Jeb Bush.
So they made the top. That they made the cut, right?
Oh, they're the top three.
Okay, so they're going to be on the top 10.
And the top 10 are the only ones who will be allowed into the so-called debate. Of course, you know, we refer to them here, Jim, as pageants.
Yeah. Well, that'll be an interesting thing when Trump gets up there and starts carrying on with some of his people. And
the other interesting thing was the focus group results that came out in the last 48 hours or so. You know, they gathered a bunch of people, they gathered a room full of people together and asked them questions about Donald Trump. And the consensus was that they liked him because he is, and I am not kidding, you may have heard this, classy. He's classy.
Classy?
Classy. C-L-A-S-S-Y, as in stay classy, Donald. No, he's classy, which I find hilarious, but I also think is kind of explainable, Jim, because on the one hand, you've got Jeb Bush, who has enough money to buy God, and last time through, we had Willard Romney, who I guess, you know, owns a controlling interest in the Mormon Church and all of their holdings, and people didn't respond well to them. On the other hand, they respond, this is my own private theory, they respond to Trump differently because in the case of the Bushes or the Romneys, they're rich and they want us to know that we are not them. Whereas, so they kind of downplay their wealth and they do stupid things like trying to prove themselves to be men of the people. Whereas Trump just says, hey, look, I'm a billionaire. Have bad dad. It's huge. I got huge wealth.
Well, I can tell you this. Wealth and class are not necessarily co-joined. May have been the case with Franklin D. Roosevelt or John F. Kennedy, but he doesn't have it. Money can't buy him all the money in the world.
No, but the thing is, the hoi polloi look at him and say, you know what, Ethel, if we ever became rich, we'd behave just like him. We'd have a gold-painted plane with our name on it.
You know, it's hard for me to understand people that shallow. Because if I had that kind of money, that's the last thing I would do. It would certainly be going to better causes than one's own self-aggrandizement. And, you know, I'm sure that man has an ego that is real, real inflated. But in the inside of that guy, he's just hollow. He's as hollow as an egg that you've taken the interior out of. He's just a shell.
Well, he reminds
like most of his companies, you know.
Well, hey, nice. Wait a minute. Cowbell for that. He's a shell like most of his companies. Well done, Jim. Very well done.
Well, listen. Yes, sir.
I was going to say that. He does say that in the debate he'll be nice and he'll be respectful.
I don't think he knows the meaning of those words.
I have no idea how I'll do. Maybe I'll do terribly. Maybe I'll do great. I've never debated before. I'm not a debater. I get things done. I don't talk about it. I get it done. People talk about it. Politicians talk about it. They debate all over the place and nothing happens. I'm sort of the opposite. I look forward to the debate on Thursday night, and it's certainly my intention to be very nice and highly respectful of the other candidates.
We'll see. And he may be able to pull off that for a while, but I'm sure all that inner putrescence.
The top 10 right now is Trump, Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, Ben Carson, Mike Huckabee, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio. Let's see, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Ted Cruz at 8, John Kasich 9. So.
Oh, dear. Well, that will truly be what I would consider to be a confederacy of dunces.
Amen to that.
All right, that's about all I have to offer. You've got somebody else that wants to talk, and I just wanted to say meow. Wish me luck with the shady lady tomorrow.
Oh, indeed, indeed. I hope she has as little angst as humanly, well, or felinely possible.
Well, you know, cats are extremely, they're vain, and their appearance means a great deal to them. So, but whatever has to be done to get rid of that, but like I admonish anybody with a long-haired cat, keep them brushed. That's something I failed, and God knows, she paid for it, and so did I, and particularly if they get older, you know.
Yeah.
They just, they're like the rest of us. We all just kind of, I guess, slip off on our maquillage. So on that note, I'll bid you good night, sir.
All right. You have a good evening, Jim. Take care.
All right, sir.
Bye. And it's about 28 minutes past the hour. If you want to jump into the conversation, do please feel free. And we'll get you to air as quickly as possible. Oh, what else? What else? What else? Well, apparently the whole Obama is Hitler thing worked because, well, look, Reverend Brother Pastor Governor Diabetes Snake Oil Cure Salesman Mike Huckabee has made it into the top 10. Should we? I don't know. I mean, what is it? It's probably scheduled for what, 8 o'clock Thursday night next? Should we plan on broadcasting and commenting or I don't know. Because I admit it. I don't take nights off. But I'm going to be strongly tempted to be, as I noted, absolutely glued to the set for this one. Because as Lottie noted in the chat room, wow, not a non-rabid candidate among them. And so if it's the top 10, that means Carly Farina? Mm-mm. Nope, not in. That means there's going to be a mad scramble for that number 10 slot. And of course, also as noted last night, that's the way this is being designed. Now, the Republicans have said they're not going to have as many debates as they did last time because it wound up not working to their benefit. Ooh, no Rick Perry. Oh. Although Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is apparently doing all it can to try to get him onto the list. Somebody must have made a call to somebody, and somebody had lunch. But who's not in? Oh, Piyush Jindal. No Piyush Jindal. No George Pataki. No Chris Christie. Whoa. But what does it say that's the 10 best according to likely Republican voters? See, once again, it's like when a Republican says something awful and the audience hollers and claps and hoots and cheers. That's the thing. It's the hollering, hooting, clapping, and cheering that's terrifying. Where is there even a single rational voice in that list? It's not Trump. Scott Walker is a moron. Jebbia, according to CNN, he's at 10%. 20% say Trump. 13% say Scott Walker. Jebbia gets 10. Four are tied at 6%. Ben Carson, who says Barack Obama is a Nazi. Mike Huckabee, who says Barack Obama is Adolf Hitler. Rand Paul, who took a chainsaw to the tax code. Marco Rubio, who says that neither Donald Trump nor Barack Obama are classy. Ted Cruz, whose father has literally poured oil on his head to anoint him the first, King of America, and John Kasich. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we need one more. And who is that? Ted Cruz and John Kasich each have a 5% share of the opinions of likely Republican voters. And there's millions of Americans who say, well, somewhere in that list is the person I'm voting for President of the United States. And of the people who will vote for the President of the United States, one of those people, not George Pataki, not Chris Christie, not Piyush Jindal, one of those people is going to get somewhere at least around 47% of eligible voting Americans, almost entirely white, majority male, plurality white female, mostly old, to say that they should run the still most powerful country on earth. And if that doesn't give you the fantods, well, lucky you, I guess. out of that will be winnowed somebody with a coin toss chance at having access to the nuclear codes. Now, if that won't put you off dinner, you're better than I. Robert in Australia notes, in one of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio shows, the writer Douglas Adams made the observation, those who want to rule are the very people who should not be allowed to do so. I think that Republican lineup is a perfect example of why. It is. But perhaps the one thing Mr. Adams, peace be upon him, didn't contemplate is that there are rubes out there that want them to rule too. By the way, since Robert wrote in from Australia, I did note that they dragged Tony Abbott out and gave him a reflective vest to talk about what a step forward it would be if those pieces of airplane that washed up on Reunion Island turn out to be MH-377. Is it 377 or 370? And somehow or another, MSNBC found the woman who is the partner of the only American on that plane, and that was one of those moments where I just don't understand for-profit media booking. They brought her on and asked her, "How do you feel now that pieces of an airplane that might or might not be that aircraft have washed up on Reunion Island?" What answer is one expecting when one asks that question? Wherein, in that question, resides anything resembling an attempt at journalism? What purpose does it serve? I don't know. I mentioned earlier in the program that we would, in fact, have a story that focused on duct tape. Yep. And we make jokes about hockey pucks and duct tape, but nobody actually does it because duct tape has a strong glue and it really does hurt when it's used on human flesh. Agnes and I do. Got precious little grandchildren, one of whom will be starting his first year of public education soon. And those are charming days, you know. They go off to school with their shiny little faces, hopefully eager to learn. And on those first couple of days, Mama, and sometimes Daddy, I confess, sits there and sniffles, weeps a little bit, sees the beginning of the unfolding American future of a child rolling out before them, understands that somehow, in a way, a veil of protection has been rent, and that their child is going out into the world, and really. You can be protective, but you wind up just hoping for the best. Tampa Bay, Florida area. And oddly enough, in some schools in Florida, they still managed to teach music, but they found a real loser to teach it at Potter Elementary School in Tampa Bay. The Hillsborough County School District. And Lindsay Blanc, who is that music teacher at Potter Elementary, she was teaching music to kindergartners. And, you know, you'll have some little children who act up and that's part of the whole public schooling process, socialization, understanding behavioral norms, that kind of thing. And fortunately, hopefully, we've gotten to a place where we don't beat the little tykes anymore. Hopefully. So some of the precious little tykes have been put in timeout at a timeout table. And one of the little boys, despite being told not to, kept turning around from the timeout table to watch the movie that his classmates were getting to watch. Because, see, he was not supposed to watch the movie because he was in timeout and was being punished. Well, he turned around to watch once, and she told him not to, and he... Then she took out a roll of duct tape, and she used duct tape as a blindfold on this 5-year-old child. To blind him from being able to watch the movie that the other kindergartners were getting to watch, you know, the kindergartners who were properly behaving. Stories in the Tampa Bay Times. Miami Herald covered it too. Monica Van is the mother of the 5-year-old boy. She said he had minor skin irritation from having duct tape placed over his eyes. I'm just kind of grateful it didn't rip his little eyebrows and little eyelashes out. His mama also says, though, that since the incident, the little fella has had nightmares and his behavior has gotten worse. Now, what mamas do when their little ones are hurt, they say, "Are you okay?" Or if they don't, they say, "Did it hurt? Did it hurt when your teacher blinded you by putting duct tape over your eyes?" And according to Mama, the little fella said, "I thought my eyeballs were going to come out when they pulled out the tape." I'll bet. Now, in the interim, Lindsay Blanc, music teacher at Potter Elementary in Tampa Bay of the Hillsborough County School District, she's been put on leave without pay. And the Hillsborough County School District then tried to make it all go away simply by not renewing her teaching contract. But that's where her union comes in. The Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association demanded a due process hearing for this woman who blinded a 5-year-old by putting duct tape over his eyes. Here's an interesting fact. Investigators for the police department interviewed 19 children that had been charges of Ms. Blanc. And it was more than just the one little 5-year-old who said that they had been duct taped. Other children reported to the interviewers that they had seen Ms. Blanc taping other children's eyes, or that at the very least she had threatened them with it. She apparently has trouble maintaining something resembling order in a classroom, because it was also reported that she told the children, and let's understand, probably the very first fear that a child comprehends on a cognitive level is what we refer to as separation anxiety. And separation anxiety is, of course, the fear of being separated from one's parents, from one's loved ones, from one's caregiver. And it is a horrifying fear for a little person. And so these little children said that another way that she had tried to get them to behave was to warn them that if they misbehaved, she would have them taken away in a white van. That white van part, that's just a little too much detail not to be true, don't you think? A rating system was instituted in the state of Florida in 2013, and this isn't like the dentist getting his Yelp reviews ruined. Potter Elementary School currently has a rating of F, indicating low performance, a low-performing school. How about that? I'm not going to run over to Google Earth or even go and look at anything else. I bet you I know where Potter Elementary School is, though. No, I don't mean on which side of Tampa Bay or anything, no. I bet you, though, it's not in an area where there's a bunch of gated communities and McMansions, don't you? I thought my eyeballs were going to come out when they pulled out the tape. By the way, despite all of this evidence, Lindsay Blanc has not been charged with even so much as a single criminal act. Another factor that leads me to believe that Potter Elementary School is probably not in an upscale white community there in Hillsborough County. He's been having nightmares. And again, we had that story, what, last week? About children and whether they have mastered basic reading skills by grade 4 will tell you about anything you could want to know about their future. Because if the answer is no, there's nothing much good going to happen. You can predict incarceration from that. You can often predict economic status, social status from that. What kind of a start in life is have the kindergartners, the 19 children there in Lindsay Blanc's kindergarten class at Potter Elementary, where do you think they fall on a continuum that leads to fourth grade and the essential predictors of academic success? This is one of those moments where you have to, I guess, kind of, if you're on our side of the political aisle, you say, well, unions have to protect their members, good and bad alike. And it's better that we let a couple of bad ones through, I suppose, than we say that the lot of it should be thrown out, baby and bathwater together. But I'll confess, I don't know why the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association would do anything more than de minimis. And maybe that's what it is. The Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association demanding a due process hearing for Lindsay Blanc. Maybe that is de minimis. Maybe that's a minimal meeting of obligations to members. But I can't help forget, or I can't help but note, that the story with which we began this Thorn in the Side Thursday involved a cop who illegally and unconstitutionally beat the tar out of an arrested, restrained subject and was immediately fired by the department, but rehired upon the unanimous vote of the Huntsville, Alabama City Council. That's not quite the same as union action, but it is similar. But if nothing else, how about a word of praise for Monica Van, the little fella's mama. For not going all Mama Grizzly on Lindsay Blanc. Of course, if things are as I suspect they are, it would not serve the little fellow at all well because then she'd wind up in jail and the little fellow would wind up in the tender mercies of the State of Florida Child Protective Services Bureau. Okay, this is all pretty grim business. Let's end on a Thorn in the Side Thursday, stupid. Got about 8 minutes to go in the program. And that should be enough time to deal with Andrea Tarantula over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. It all has to do with a magazine article retracted by Glamour of you know, the usual stuff you see in these magazines by the checkout aisle, you know, why all men are scum and how to catch one for yourself. And, of course, jumping in on the side of Glamour magazine, Andrea Tarantula, to explain the true purpose of women in the second decade of the 21st century of the Common Era.
Yeah, that's right. All right, speaking of passion, Glamour magazine is taking some heat from readers over a recent article. They say the piece called 13 Little Things That Can Make Men Fall Hard for You is outdated and sexist, with advice like answering the door in your lingerie and bringing him a beer when he steps out of the shower.
When we all know that one is supposed to answer, a woman is supposed to answer the door wrapped in saran wrap. I mean, this goes back to the 70s. I thought we'd been over this.
Other tips including giving him a massage, letting him solve your petty work problems, and obsessing over his favorite meal. It references hot dogs and cut up macaroni and cheese. The magazine later apologized, saying that nobody wants to go back to the 1950s.
Oh, please.
I know. Oh, please. Look at the...
Oh, please. Say the millionaire women.
This list, it has great suggestions in here.
I think so, too. I would
share
on the refrigerator with us.
They said after, you know, you engage in a little horizontal hula, make a sandwich.
No, really? I'm sorry for the interruptions. I want to hear this without me interrupting.
Okay, yeah. They said after, you know, you engage in a little horizontal hula, make them a sandwich. That's not called 1950s. That's
hula.
Called kindness. And frankly, I think that women should do a little more of that. But men can also be sweet to their women.
Married couple.
Yeah, but really, horizontal hula? Yeah, okay, we're done here, honey. Get that tight little bottom up out of the bed and go fix me a sandwich. Yeah, ham on rye and Swiss and be quick about it, sugar. No, that's not the 1950s. Women need to be more subservient in 2015. Got it.
Well, the board. Right, everyone Andrea. Likes a sandwich. Across the board. That was a great list.
And what's wrong with cut-up hot dogs and mac and cheese? That sounds delicious. Listen, I would put this list on my refrigerator. I have no problem with it. And why did they apparently retract it?
Yeah, they did.
They feel badly
about it.
Apologize
for it.
Thank
you. I think Glamour magazine is doing a great thing. I know a lot of the editors over there, Stacey. What's wrong with giving your man a brewski when he comes out of the shower? That's sweet.
Who's
I mean, I think
out of the
I think
shower?
This is why we have.
Are you daring Don Draper? What's
stop
going?
It.
I've never gotten out of the shower, but like I need to get drunk quick.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You don't have the
that
right
water
woman.
Pressure was too much.
You don't
for
have the right woman.
How about a bourbon?
Depends on who the woman is. You don't have the right woman. You know, I think that's why divorce rates are so high. Women don't know how to take care of their men anymore.
Well,
no. It's not because women don't know how to take care of their men. And can we stop using possessives in front of either gender? Pretty please. The vast majority of divorces are caused by economic stresses, and, well, maybe income inequality might work in there somewhere, but... Well, that's not something you're going to hear over there on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. No. If the women folk will just get up out of bed after sex, because, you know, he probably didn't pay any attention to whether she had an orgasm anyway, and go and make Mr. a sandwich, well, the divorce rate will fall.
Hey, it's right, Marveline. How long's it been since you made me a sandwich? I made
you one for lunch, Emery. Have you forgotten already?
It's been a damn long time since we had any weenies in the macaroni and cheese.
You don't even like it.
How'd I know you never make it for me?
Oh, okay, quitting time. So, we will begin tomorrow with a fundraising hole of $499. And thank you. Thank you, Carol, for being the lone support this evening. It means a lot. Indeed, it does. Thank you. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, I hope you'll all join in, or lots of folks will join in, and we'll have a vigorous conversation. Thanks to everybody who participates in the program, in the chat room, via email, via tweets, and Facebook, and even just silently. Thank you all for your continuing support of this independent broadcast operation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT.org. And yes, always, Gina, it's all for you.